1.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's February 27th, 2023. Oh my God, it's almost the end of February, Franny.
It is, I know.
To be rebroadcast March 1st, 2023 at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can comment right down here below, or if you're listening to this on audio file, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, Spotify, iTunes, or possibly your favorite podcast outlet. Anyway, Ron's rant of the week. Why are we not promoting cycling and walking instead of electric cars? Everywhere I go, I see electric car ads.
Yeah.
Everything that's being promoted right now, electric car ads. Everything politically, electric car ads. It's all about, we got to get ourselves out of our gasoline cars and into our electric cars. How about onto our bikes? Hello, hello. Cities where it's easy to walk and bike have fewer instances of obesity, high blood pressure, and all sorts of other good things like mental health, according to new studies. So I have a little something to talk about there. It's off a streets blog. We'll get more of that in the show. It just drives me nuts. Anyway, our mentality here in this country is just so backwards. But anyway, car-centric. That's us. Positive side, I hosted a Pedal to End Cancer ride at the community center this past weekend. Thanks to everyone who participated and contributed to the cause. Super big shout out to Billy and Chris who traveled from afar to join in. Afar, that's a place. And a shout out to Cleveland, Ohio. Why? What happens when you ask public officials to give up driving for a week? Now, there's a big one. That sounds like a good time. I'll have more of that in the show also. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. I have to love this comment. You know, I get comments from people all the time, but this is the best one yet in a while. Why? Because it just, you know, lights the fire underneath Pedalin' Ron and his love-hate relationship with the technology that is controlling our industry right now. Not controlling, but coming in, creeping in. I'm going to say creeping in, but even though I know that it's going to be a complete reality here in sometime soon, and I'm going to have to suck it up and deal with it. But gotta love this comment. It's slightly humid, so everyone's disc brakes are howling like forlorn wolves. Not too long ago, road bikes were elegantly silent, only purring gently when coasting. Now it's moaning brakes, rattlesnake free hubs, and creaky bottom brackets that sound like breaking plastic. Picture the scene. It's just been raining out, and you're getting ready to commute home from work, and you cycle, you bring your cycle out onto the tarmac. A scent of fresh rain or hot tarmac fills your nostrils. You notice a pedestrian, push the button on the traffic light, go up ahead. Lights turn red. You gently squeeze your brake to stop before the line, and at the same time, your brakes let out this horrific squeal, frightening the pedestrians and ruining your street cred. So, anyway, that's the thing that happens. Brakes like to squeak. Disc brakes really like to squeak. We used to have these great brakes back in the day. They were made by Mayfac, and let's see how far back I can rattle people's memories on this one. Mayfac Racers. They were a center pull brake. They were as powerful a brake as you could possibly find. As a matter of fact, they were often used on cyclocross bikes because they were so powerful. They didn't really require, you could set them far away from the rim and you'd still get this incredible brake. But boy, did they howl. They just howled like crazy. Those were the old-fashioned, what I like to call old-fashioned disc brakes, which means that they were rubber pads going up against a big disc, a wheel, basically a rim. But anyway, so they just really made a lot of noise, and there wasn't a whole lot you could do about them. You could tow them in a little bit. You could mess around. But they really had a problem with so much vibration within the brake caliber itself that there was no way you could make that design really work great. but everybody knew when you were coming. Boy, you could hear them a mile away. And everyone knew when you were in a bike race, whether or not you had Mayfac racers or other brakes. So they were pretty obvious. Here we have this disc brake thing. And we have people complaining now about their disc brakes when they get wet. And we have solutions out there, we hope, for that sort of thing. But you know what? My final conclusion is, and this is just the way it's going to be. I know I'm grumpy. I know I'm an old timer. But boy, I do love my rim brakes. They work great. Anyway, I'm just hoping that the industry, as I know it, which it is pointing in this direction, is not going to end disc brakes rim brakes as I know them. And I'm not going to have to just, you know, purchase either really old bicycles in order to have rim brakes or have custom bikes made for me. That I'm going to have to get into a fight with the frame builder about whether or not they're going to put disc brakes in my bike or not. There's just so many things out there. Well, anyway, we're going to move on. So we're about to end the American Heart Month, which is February, and I mentioned this last week, and I will mention it again this week, that every year more than 600,000 Americans die from heart disease. The number one cause of deaths for most groups, heart disease affects all ages, genders, and ethnicities. Risk factors include high cholesterol, high blood pressure, smoking, diabetes, and excessive alcohol use. So, we can go and we can kind of take apart each and every one of those things. Why do you have high cholesterol? Why do you have high blood pressure? Why are you smoking still? Really? For real? Diabetes, excessive alcohol use. We could break those all down and find out what the root causes are to all of those. But I'm going to tell you one thing.
Charlie Kale smokes.
It's probably Charlie Kale smokes. Okay.
She does.
Okay. So it probably all comes down to the fact that you need some sort of satisfaction somewhere where you are not getting it. So therefore, you're doing all these other things. Just ride your bike. It's a great thing. It makes you happy. It does good things for you. It's wonderful. By the way, this is Bicycle Talk, if you haven't figured this out yet. Yeah, I talk a lot about bikes. I'm very enthusiastic about bicycles. I think bicycles are a cure for so many evils in the world. And if everyone would just ride a bike, we would be on a much nicer planet in a much nicer situation. But silly me for having thoughts like that.
You are very silly.
Bringing me on to, yeah, I am very silly. Bringing me on, you're still here. I mentioned that only because you know that Fran and I back on the 14th of February celebrated our, hang on tight, folks, 18th year together. 18, that's 18 years here. 18th year together. So as silly as I may be and as much of a pain in the butt as I may be, she's still here. So that's a good thing. And I'm still there. So that's a good thing, too. It's beautiful. Moving on. I had made a reference to cities where it's easy to walk and bike have fewer incidents of obesity and high blood pressure, according to a new study. Gee, how does this segue into the American Heart Association and American Heart Month? Well, pretty simple, I would say. Definitely pretty simple. So, yeah. This is not rocket science. This is just, you know, a thing that happens. Let's see, that's the public officials one. Now I've lost my reference here. Hold on just one second and we will get there. So this makes so much sense to me. And there are, you know, it's hard to believe that in this day and age, we are now just discovering things like this. I find it just hard to believe. But I guess we are. So, you know, as people have learned from, especially the COVID thing really like kind of changed people's ideas, attitudes, and ways of transporting themselves because it was no longer safe to be in a heavily populated public situation because you might catch COVID. So people started riding their bikes. That was beautiful. People started walking more. That was beautiful. They got on their skateboards. They ran. They did all sorts of things that required them to stay out of a very major public area so that they could get things done. And it was great because it just opened the eyes to general public and to politicians, and you know, the world was watching. It was a beautiful thing. So we move on to, and I've got a little piece here. There was a new study from City Lab. Let's see, maybe I should jump there first. Let's go over here. That's not it. So there's yeah, I am just not finding anything that I had set up before. All right, so we have, here we go. To build a healthier city, begin at the sidewalk. There's a good start. Lack of pedestrian infrastructure, as here along this busy Bayshore Drive in Miami's Coconut Grove, has been linked to poor health. Huh? No kidding. So if you don't have places for pedestrians and cyclists to use on the road, then what's going to happen? The road's going to become more clogged with automobiles and buses. And, you know, I'm not against the buses because buses they transport more people per motor than an automobile does. And they are generally designed to do that sort of thing. So they're a little better as far as that goes. Buses and trains, part of infrastructure. By the way, for those of you who work for the Department of Transportation in any state, it is the Department of Transportation, which includes buses and trains and other various forms of transportation like walking and cycling. Those are things that are all part of transporting ourselves. It's not just cars and trucks, and it's not just about cars and trucks. So lobbying aside from all the big oil companies and the big automakers, we need to pay a lot more attention to this. So here we go. Oklahoma City went on a citywide diet in 2008 because they were burdened with one of the highest adult obesity rates in the United States. How about that? So then Mayor Mick Cornett challenged residents to collectively lose 1 million pounds. Cool, huh? The campaign involved more than just slogans. In a sprawling city built around cars, where you literally can get a speeding ticket during rush hour, as the mayor put it in a 2013 TED Talk, Cornett admitted to infrastructure-based change. The city built parks, added sidewalks, and invested new running and biking trails as part of a nearly $800 million tax-funded investment to improve walkability and get residents moving. By 2012, the city hit Cornett's weight loss gain. Between 2014 and 2017, wellness reports show declines in deaths from stroke, cardiovascular disease, as well as improvements in overall mortality rates. While there is still a long way to go, Oklahoma City remains one of the unhealthiest cities in the U.S. today. The city's ongoing urban transformation taps into something that researchers have long said. The built environment plays an influential role in the physical and mental health of a community. It's just another lever that we can use to change population's health. It to me, you know, the world that Fran and I live in, we look at this as there's two different moments you can have in life. One is the aha moment where you realize something. And then the other one is the DUH moment, in which case this is sort of a DUH moment. So, duh, yeah, well, okay. So people that start riding their bikes and start transporting themselves a little bit more by walking, maybe they're a little less inclined to smoke a cigarette because, you know what? It's hard to smoke a cigarette when you're working that hard. maybe they're a little happier when they get home so they don't, you know, pour a, you know, a six pack of beer down their throats. I don't know. There's things that can really change a lot when you start moving your body. It makes a huge difference. So, it says here you have the smoking and healthy eating campaigns, but what we're pointing to is that if you change some of the structures, you can also change health opportunities. All right. The study was based on an analysis of 164 million Google Street View images harvested from across the U.S., a vast database of urban, suburban, and rural roadways. Students trained a computer model to recognize and label various built environmental features. The images were then compared to demographic and socioeconomic data from the U.S. Census Bureau, as well as health data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Researchers found that neighborhoods equipped with markers of urban development, like sidewalks, crosswalks, were linked to reductions in obesity and high blood pressure. For example, similarly, more road signs and streetlights correlated with lower prevalence of high cholesterol and even cancer, as well as reduced depression and smoking. Did you happen to catch that I said reduced depression and smoking? Yeah, this is mental health too. It's not just physical health. This is a good thing. On the other hand, the presence of chain link fences, which the researchers describe as potential indicators of urban disorder, correlated with reports of more poor and mental health days. So did single lane roads, seen as markers of rural and less developed areas. Team also built an interactive map that allows users to look at the prevalence of different structures and in their neighborhood, which could enable researchers, experts, and community advocates to zero in on unhealthy features and better assess where the built environment can also be improved. So, you know, that what did I say earlier about an aha moment and a duh moment? Well, there it is. I mean, so neighborhoods that are designed around more health and fitness, being that there are sidewalks, being that there are bike lanes, being that there are safe places for you to ride your bike. And also, let's add into it, bus stops, you know, so people can get on the bus and they can commute on the bus. They're happier. They're healthier. Disease goes down. Happiness goes up. This is not rocket science, folks. It is an absolute no-brainer. As I say every week, get out and ride your bike. I thought it was interesting. This is a Bloomberg report, by the way, just if you're wondering where this information is coming from. But at the closing statement here, just so you know, health outcome is one of the most direct measures of the built environment quality. This can be a great feedback to all kinds of designers, engineers, and architects to visually evaluate what a good urban environment should look like. Again, not rocket science, just observations, basically, is what we're looking at here. So very cool that, you know, we can see that cities that are making these improvements are actually getting better health. That's a beautiful thing. Let's point our fingers way across the pond and go over to Amsterdam or Copenhagen and take a look at what's going on there. Cars are not really a big issue there because people just don't drive them. They don't go that way. They have an infrastructure which is built around cycling and walking and transporting oneself in a safe manner. And cars are kind of out of the picture. And if they are in the picture, people pay dearly to own them over there. It's a huge transformation. Also, should you want to look up, you can Google this one for those of us who Google things. Google up where the happiest people in the world live. Check it out. People that are happiest in the world have a huge cycling infrastructure. Interesting. I wonder if that's connected in any way. So, anyway, We move on. I don't know forward or not, but we move on. Electric cars shouldn't distract us from changes to the built environment. News of the fact that mining of lithium comes up short to solve the climate crisis highlights a need for walkability and micro mobility. So this led me down a rabbit hole this morning, which I'm not going to explore with you guys because I'm not really, really into promoting electric cars. I am into promoting electric bicycles, electric assist bicycles, because they still require you to pedal them, therefore still requiring you to get exercise. So there's still a bonus to owning a vehicle that still requires some self-propulsion. This is a good thing. But I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole, but if you could see or ever want to explore what is going on in China right now and in the electric car industry, these are vehicles that we will not see on our streets for a very, very long time, I am sure. They're very small. They will scare most Americans because most Americans will look at them as, you know, too tiny to go out and drive around with the big vehicles. Well, get rid of the big vehicles and then they're not too tiny anymore because everybody's got a tiny vehicle. But another story for another time. But there are things going on over in China right now with electric vehicles that will blow you away. And the price tag is 1/10 the price of a Tesla, just so you know. Just so you know. But anyway, these things happen and that's what we've got in front of us. And is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? You know, it's a thing. Why don't we just get more people on bikes? There's so many cool bikes out there. There are so many cool bikes that are e-assist bikes that you can use to do your daily business. And now, if you take a really good look at, I follow the cargo bike industry very, very closely because there's some wicked cool cargo bikes out there that are e-assist that have made younger couples that are existing in our country right here no longer want to own a car. They're just using their bikes and their e-bikes to do everything. And yes, it does include putting the kids in it and driving it off to the market or to school or whatever it is that they're going to be doing with these things. But there is an answer if you're looking for it. That's all. There is an answer. And it's never too late. I'm going to push this one out real strong and hard. Me as an almost 68-year-old man, I don't have to stay as fit as I want to be right now to be able to transport myself around because the e-business, the electric bicycle business, the e-assist bicycle business is going on a rocket launch into the sky. And so it's I can just get some help and I'll be just fine riding my bicycle. And I can ride my bicycle for a very, 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 very long time because of that. Now, I do own an e-bike. It is an antique. I will tell you right now, it was put out by SRAM many, many, many years ago. And so it's got at least, 20 years or so of age on it. I did replace the battery on it and I've beefed it up a little bit because the batteries are a little better, but this thing is not fast. It is not powerful by any means. The new e-bikes are tremendous. They're so cool with what they can do. This is not one of those. But you know what? I can go out and run errands on it. I can pull a trailer with it. I rode it a few weeks ago to go shopping, and I came home with 30 pounds of groceries with it, and it was fine. It wasn't hard at all because I've got that assistance of the electric motor that helps me out when I'm trying to climb up hills, which are really the issue out here. So anyway, there is an answer, like I say. So I got to bring this one out because I thought it was really clever. I found it on Streets Blog, and it is a big shout out to Cleveland, which I had mentioned earlier in the podcast that I was going to go in this direction. So, Cleveland, Ohio, all right? Middle America, I guess you would call Ohio kind of middle America. Kind of has political who knows what going on out there. It's always back and forth. Tends to be a little more, I think, on a red state basis, I believe.
Cleveland rocks.
Ohio? Yeah, but Ohio. I'm talking Ohio. Cleveland, yes, may rock. Ohio is tends to be politically drifting towards the right. So, and one of the reasons is as you get out that far, you're getting closer and closer to Detroit, which is what? It's the, you know, the motor capital of the world. It's where the whole car industry was based out of. So there's a lot of people that live and work in that area that are dependent upon the oil and automobile industry. And so they have a different feeling about this. But so we take a look at this and we see what a city can do when they get a clue. And they go, you know what, let's just try this and see what happens. We want to learn more about this. You know, I've done presentations for towns before. And my big invite is when you are ready to take a look at this, I would like to take you for a very short bike ride around your town and just show you what it's like to see everything in transportation from the handlebars of a bicycle versus the windshield of a car. Big, big eye-opener, huge eye-opener, because it's so much easier to point out the concerns, to point out what could positively be done at this intersection right here to make it safer. And once you draw people into that environment and you guide them through, let's say, a dangerous intersection that really is a little sketchy, and you know, you know how to do it because you're a cyclist and you're aware of how to handle yourself in traffic and all. But when you bring people into that have never dealt with that before, it will scare the living daylights out of them. And that's exactly what you want to do, because they will see it from a different light, not from the windshield of a car. Windshield of a car is just, it's a false, safe environment. So, a campaign to get public officials in Cleveland, in the Cleveland area, to attempt a week without driving didn't get many electeds to go totally car-free. But it did make a powerful statement about automobile dependency that could spur change and inspire other activists to issue similar challenges. On National Transit Equity Day on February 4th, the grassroots group Clevelanders for Public Transit dared transportation leaders in the Ohio City and surrounding Cayuga County to rely on local light rail buses and their accompanying walking and biking connections for one full week, and post about their experiences, good or bad, on social media. Perfect. What a great way to do this. So yeah, there are people going to have good experiences? Of course they are. We know that. We ride bikes. We get it. We totally understand this. We understand how we can deal with this. Will they have bad experiences? Absolutely. Like I said, I've taken people through intersections that have scared the living daylights out of them, and then explained what could be done to make it better. And they may come back with, I'm never going to do that again. It was the most dangerous thing I've ever put myself through. They may do that. It's quite possible. What is that doing? It is highlighting a situation that is just begging for improvement. These are good things. These are all good things. So even a negative comment is not bad. It's not bad at all. So what it did, so as they said, they posted their experiences, good or bad, on social media. The effort drew a flurry of local news coverage, particularly after Mayor Justin Bibb tweeted about his smooth ride on the local bus rapid transit line, and after council member Rebecca Moore shared that her own local bus had skipped her stop entirely, forcing her to drive to work instead. There you go.
That's terrible.
So there it is. You know, the system only works if the system works. And if you have more participation and ridership and awareness, that bus probably would have stopped. But it didn't stop because it probably never did stop there because there was no one that ever got on it until this woman came along. I don't know the actual facts and figures about this, but that's my guess. That's totally my guess. So Clevelanders for Public Transit certainly aren't the only advocates who want leaders to get out from behind the wheel. Disability Rights Washington issued a similar call to residents statewide in September with particular outreach to state lawmakers and researchers have long warned that windshield bias, like that one, huh, can affect the worldview of decision makers who rely almost exclusively on private automobiles. I like that, windshield bias. There's actually a highlight here that I didn't click on, which I think could be fun to explore in the future. One study found that transportation officials who drive were more likely to overestimate the impact of distracted walking on pedestrian crash rates, which experts say is actually a negligible factor, not a factor at all. So you drive a car and you already have a bias or a negative experience with seeing a pedestrian. How about that, huh? Whereas when you actually get out there and experience it, as I said before, put them in the situation and they will learn. They will totally learn. I remember once, and this is part more of this article right here. I remember once during a meeting a year or so ago, a transit agency was presenting a new contract for bus wrapping advertising. And one trustee asked, can the riders see out the window through that? And the chairman answered, yes, the answer is you really can't. And sometimes that means you can't see your stop. But this person didn't know that. There's no excuse for a transit leader not to know the basics of bus riding experience, but it's easy to understand why a person with options would regularly rely on transit in a city like Cleveland, where roughly 81% of the Metro drivers drive alone to work and services often lacking. Per capita transit spending in Ohio ranks 45th out of 50 as far as 50 states go, despite the fact that large pockets of it, like predominantly Black East Cleveland, 35% of the population doesn't own a car. Of all the people who tried this challenge, I don't think any of them were able to faithfully complete it. Since service was cut by more than one-third since the turn of the century, getting around Cleveland by transit has just gotten harder and harder. So Martin understood why a few local leaders were able to actually ditch driving even just for a few days, though he didn't always accept their reasoning. Some elected said they spoke to citing the lack of intercity transit options across Cleveland's sprawling suburbs and made it challenging to perform regional roles. Others who live in major light rail lines with service every 15 minutes at rush hour said they were happy to take the rapid to work, but picked up the keys for cumbersome midday errands. And some seemingly just didn't see the point of riding a mile in a strap hanger's shoes. Strap hanger, that's interesting. So this comment was made by a person here. I didn't have one or two conversations with folks that said outright, no, I'm not even going to try to do this at all. Of course, I can get inside their heads, but I think part of their thought process might have been, well, I'm a council person. I don't work for the Greater Cleveland Regional Transit Authority. This isn't my responsibility, but they're supposed to be representing everyone, including the 25% of Clevelanders who don't have a car, or the 12% of Cayuga County residents who don't have a car. I think they're not doing their job well when they can't empathize with that.
I think empathize it's Cahoga.
Cahoga?
Cahoga? Yeah, Cayuga's in New York in the Finger Lakes. Oh. Cahoga is where Cahoga is.
Okay, right there. Yeah. Okay. He pointed out that he noted that the participation was particularly low among trustees of the transit agency itself, and that the group is actively pushing to appoint regular riders to the board. Isn't that interesting? So, but if you're on the town council, all right, and you're challenged with this and you don't do it, yet you fund this, what is your chance of funding an alternative transportation if you've never taken the alternative transportation, if you've never actually seen it and experienced it, if you've never ridden your bike down a busy street where it's obvious that there needs to be a protective lane there. And these are the people that are making the laws and spending the taxpayer money to make these things happen. Hey, folks, if you ride a bike and you're into this and you really want to make a difference, it's time to get involved in your local politics. It's a good thing. It's a really, really good thing. Even if you don't make the decision to change your entire life and flip everything upside down and become a town council person, show up to a meeting. Make a public statement. You know, I made a public statement at a meeting a couple of months ago. It was all about a proposed traffic light that was going in on one of our main arteries coming into the University of Connecticut and into Storrs, Connecticut. And they want to put a traffic light there. And the people that, in my world, that have more of a clue about cycling and walking and transporting yourself in other ways, which, by the way, many university students do because they don't have the resources for owning an automobile. We just went there and said, don't do this. This is crazy. This is a crazy thing. Why do we need another traffic light in town? They're expensive. They're expensive to put in. They're expensive to maintain. They're expensive as far as the amount of electricity that they use. A roundabout is not expensive. Yeah, maybe the overall engineering on it, the original engineering, because they do require a little bit more space to be able to make a roundabout work properly. But once they're in place, it's not rocket science, folks. Once again, we go back to that science thing. It's not about that. This is traffic engineering 101. And the problem that we have in this country, probably in a lot of other countries too, is traffic engineering 101. When we talk traffic, we think cars, trucks. That's what we think of. We don't think of other means of transportation. If you take a look at all the studies on roundabouts and all of the issues that were present before a roundabout was put in, even if there was already a traffic light there, and that was taken out and the roundabout was put in, the fatality rates almost disappear because nobody runs a red light in a traffic circle. There's no red light to run. And if you don't run the red light, then you don't have the opportunity to slam into another vehicle, or worst case scenario, avoiding that vehicle, going across the lane, and then having a head-on collision with a vehicle coming the other way. It can't happen. So, anyway, I go on and on about this. But this is, I see obvious answers. I see towns that are paying attention to it. I hope more towns do. I hope my town does. Really like to see more of this awareness out there, because there's such a simple solution to not a difficult problem at all. And yet it solves a huge problem as far as people getting hit by cars, either riding their bikes or walking, two of the main ways that this happens. And it's just really, really sad. So and more on this particular article here, and something we often hear from local leaders is that it's really the state of Ohio's fault that transit is so bad in Cleveland. No. So the councilman says that's partly true. The state does willfully underfund shared transportation. But that's been the case for so long that it's way past time for local leaders to step up. Exactly. You don't get the funds unless you ask for them, unless you give a challenging argument as to why you need the funds there. You can't get anything done by keeping quiet. You got to get out. You got to present and, you know, show the reasons why it's good. And as I say at the end of every podcast, you got to go to these meetings with solutions, not problems or complaints. If you go there with problems and complaints, you're going to be labeled as one of those. And that's not going to get you anywhere. If you show up to a situation like this with a solution, a viable solution, one that makes a lot of sense, one that maybe even costs less money, then you're going to be looked at as a hero. You're going to be looked at as, wow, that guy's a problem solver. That woman just showed us what we need to do. And you know what? If we do this, she's right. She's made a very, very good point. You got to go with solutions. Don't go there like you're a raving crazy person, because you'll just be looked at as a raving crazy person and you won't get anything done. So
no.
There it is. And it's not just social service for poor people. It's so important for social cohesion, for economic mobility, for every justice movement that you can name. We really need to get on board, literally. So anyway, that's the way that ended. I just thought it was a cool article. It just hits it right to the point. Go to your town council and say, hey, give up your car for a week. Let's see what happens. See what we learn by trying other forms of transportation. You know, I've been watching and I started looking for the schedules for the bus. There's a bus that runs between Willimantic and Storrs, and it's on a regular schedule. A lot of the students who live off campus use it to get back and forth. And I've been watching that and realizing that, you know, that's something that I could probably utilize, because I live, right down from Fran's office is a bus stop on Route 195. There's a couple of them, one on both sides of the road. And there's a bus that regularly goes through there. Also, on those buses, there are bicycle racks on the front of the buses. So not only could I ride my bike all of the 2.5 miles, and I may have to do this experiment just to see how it all works, to that bus stop, wait for the bus, when the bus gets there, put my bike on the front, and then get a trip up to Storrs. And when I say up to Storrs, Fran knows what I'm talking about. It sits on the top of a god-awful big hill, and if you're riding your bike up there, you're gonna put a lot of work in to get there.
Yeah.
But it could then deposit me on campus, or as I go to the community center almost every day up in Storrs, because I work there, it would give me an opportunity to then ride home, which is more mostly downhill, and that's kind of a cool thing. So, you know, maybe I'll just check it out and give you guys a report someday and tell you exactly how that worked and how close to the transit being on time was and if it fit into my time schedule or not. I think it would be an interesting experiment. And that's another way that you can learn more about how the transportation systems work in your local community. So don't be afraid to take the bus and see what's going on there. So you'll find that most of the transit systems that are out there too, most of them will have a bicycle rack on the front. That's pretty commonplace now. So it's a good thing. Hello.
Like Weird Al says, another one rides the bus.
That's right. Another one rides the bus. It's all true. It's all true. So anyway, cool stuff. Get your public get your public officials involved. That's really what this comes down to. Things don't get done unless you go out there and do them. That's the way this all works. It really, really makes a big, big difference. So anyway, I thought that was a cool thing. And again, it's back to my one of my favorite sites out there called Streets Blog USA. And they have information there, and it's usa.streetsblog.org is the website. If you want to go check it out yourself, you can see what's going on. They have interesting information on bicycling, walking, transit, car culture, micro mobility, mobility justice, and they even have a little area on COVID-19, which I am hearing rumor, Fran, that there's an endemic on the horizon. Do you know about that? Have you heard about that?
Meaning COVID is going endemic?
Meaning that COVID is being proposed to go endemic, yes.
Right.
So there is, I don't know if it's true. I have heard it through a couple of different media sources, but...
Well, that's the whole question is what makes COVID-19 go from a pandemic to endemic? And does the pandemic get declared over or is it over? And everything I've read says it's not simple. The transition is not by a declaration. There are some official things that happen, like it looks like... We don't know this 100% for sure, but in May, that the United States is going to declare COVID. They're going to take off the emergency situation of COVID-19, which is going to be concerning because there are certain things that there are certain benefits that people will no longer be able to get. For example, the student loan forbearance may be gone and you'll have to start paying on your student loan again. There's a few issues healthcare issues and things that will no longer be emergencies and there won't be funds directed to certain locations.
Right. There's already been funds pulled away from the state of Connecticut because of that. But that's understandable.
And so that's part of it. And then the World Health Organization and the CDC have to say something about whether it's a pandemic anymore. And the thing is, you know, in the United States, we're considering it kind of calmed down. People are not paying attention anymore. I mean, most people don't wear masks anymore.
That is the problem, is that as we perceive it to be calmed down, it comes back. And that's what's going to happen, is it's going to roar again for a little bit. And then, we're going to get these peaks and valleys.
But
the question is it still killing people as much as it was? Is it still infecting people as much as it was?
It's still killing people.
And how many people have been infected by it and therefore have an immunity towards it?
It's definitely still killing people. It's probably not killing as many people.
Right.
And one of the things is the people who were very susceptible to it are already gone. And so you and I caught it at a time where we had 3 vaccines and Omicron is just not as virulent as OG COVID, or it wasn't for us. But really, statistically, COVID is not super virulent. It's only virulent for people with pre-existing conditions. And the vast majority of people, when they get COVID, they don't get super sick from it.
Right.
But
so
there
it's
is
a weeding process, actually.
It's right. It and you and I had we had some immunity from our vaccines that we had.
Right.
And we also were fortunate enough to get Omicron. And then we just have to hope that we don't get long COVID from it. And so far, so good.
So far, very good.
Yeah.
Actually,
in my case,
it's been really, really good. I've been sticking to a protocol, and I just had a very long weekend of working out. I had a 3-hour session on Saturday and an hour and a half session on Sunday, and I got on the bike again this morning to teach a class, and I had one of the better classes that I've had in a while, even though my legs are tired for sure from being on the bike for a long time. I have been gradually weaning myself back into it. I guess, can you wean in? I don't know.
No.
Progressively.
No.
Wean off. But I've been progressively adding a little bit more effort into my workouts and getting my wattage to increase, and also really, really slowly on the cardiovascular end of things, to the point where I was working at 75% of my aerobic capacity this morning and holding much higher wattages than I've held in the past. So it's all, it's coming around, but the greatest thing about life is that you can just learn something new every day. It's so cool. And right when you think you know everything, never think you know everything. You have not a clue. There's just so much more to learn. And so this little experience that I've had, this 2-year experience that I've had between the cardiovascular disease and the open heart surgery and the quadruple bypass and now getting COVID and coming off of that and recovering from that. It has been this incredible, tremendous learning experience for me, not just in dealing with all those things, but in my general health altogether and my general fitness. My general fitness, I think, now is on a pattern of improvement and probably will continue to be. But anyway, I just veered off course here on where I was at. So I'm going to drop back in there because we're going to run out of time here in a few minutes. So we're going to go forward here. We're going to talk about, again, these the cities that are getting in shape and how it's all working, selling, you know, passes to businesses and schools and other large institutions, could help transit agencies rebuild their ridership post-pandemic, placing hope in environmentally helpful, harmful lithium mining to save the world from climate catastrophe will only feed America's thirst for bigger vehicles with bigger batteries, preventing shifting towards walking and biking. Europe's tiny electric cars are more fuel efficient than standard EVs, but they're often illegal in the U.S. That's an interesting piece. That's what sent me down that rabbit hole this morning. The U.S. railroads are going against their own self-interest by opposing electrification. That's interesting. President Biden wants infrastructure grant recipients to buy American. The problem is a lot of the necessary materials are no longer made in the United States. Austin's Cap Metro is delaying two new bus rapid transit routes until 2025 due to miscalculations about how many electric buses will be required. And Cincinnati is seeking feedback on proposed BRT routes. Portland's Biketown Bike Share Service is hiking fees by 50%. There's just so many things going on. A San Diego man whose brother was killed by a driver while riding an e-scooter writes that protected bike lanes could have saved his life. Yeah. New bike lanes in Kalamazoo will connect downtown and the north side. A coalition of Peoria groups are fighting to prioritize walking and biking over cars. Yay, let's hear it for Peoria. Good. Yemen is finally paving its rugged death road, which has claimed numerous lives. And if you want to see the world by bike, there's 10 great cities to visit. Right now, we're not going to go down that route, but maybe we'll check that out in the future. It's kind of cool. So yeah, it's time. It's time for cities to start paying attention, and it's time for us as advocates of cycling to get out and start having more conversations. We really need to make this happen. May is coming. You know what they say, May is coming. Not winter is coming, May is coming. Mm-hmm. Why do I say May is coming? Because May is bike month. It's bike month here in the United States, and it is a great opportunity to right now make contact with people that are in your community that have some influence or will have an ear to listen to why things need to progress forward with cycling in your community. So that's my little soapbox. I'll get off of it now because we are just going to run out of time, and I have certainly never run out of information to talk about. So there's a lot of stuff here. We're gonna jump real quick over to, hey there, bike racing fans. The UAE Tour is over. Remco Evenepoel has won the UAE Tour, and Lucas Plapp was second, and Adam Yates was third. And if you didn't see the final stage, Yates won the final stage. It was just big attack on a hill. It was all sorts of great stuff going on. He averaged 43.77 kilometers per hour. For those of you who need the math changed over, I did it. That's 27 miles an hour average speed. That's really, really fast if you have ever raced a bicycle and been out there even on a solo effort. That's wicked fast. So anyway, it's good stuff. That is over, but guess what? Right around the corner, there are the Cobble Classics. We had a couple of them this weekend, which were way cool. If you had a chance to look, it was really cool. The Umloop het Nootsblad was this weekend on Saturday, and the 69th edition of the Belgian Classic, known as the Kroon Brussels Kroon, was on Sunday. So those were the two openers to the Cobble Classics. And it was, you know, it's just really exciting stuff. I watched the videos of this because I have a subscription to a site which allows me to watch it. Those great British guys from the Global Cycling Network are basically broadcasting this, so it's wicked cool. But I just can't understand how they can go that fast and work that hard on cobblestones like that. But wait, folks, you know what's coming. Next weekend, it's the Strada Bianca. Hey, that's a big one. That's a big classic. And once we get into April, we're going to be going to the Paris-Roubaix. So cool stuff, all sorts of cool stuff out there. And we'll have more information to talk about in the future on that. So we got the events page. Meet your pal Pedal and Ron and others from Domestique Events at Pedal Power in Willimantic, Connecticut on the 25th of March at 4 p.m. for a pre-event celebration of the Natchog Epic Gravel Ride on the 26th, which brings me to the Natchog Epic Gravel Ride on the 26th. It starts at the Thompson Speedway in Thompson, Connecticut. Explores a lot of the great dirt roads that are up in the northeastern corner. And at this time, there are 617 people pre-registered for this event. There's an 850 max. If you have any interest whatsoever in coming to this event, in participating in this event, I would recommend that you go on to Bike Reg and maybe pop your name on the list, because the spaces are going fast. So big shout out to those folks and my friend Richard. Yeah, I told you I'd give you plugs on the show for the Natchog Epic. It's coming soon, and I hope to see you guys there because I hope to be there. So that'll be cool. The Taipei Cycle Taipei Show. The physical show is March 22nd through the 25th. And the digital show is the 22nd through the 7th. So we'll have more about that. Why do I mention that? Because anything that's new that's coming across the pike in technology in the bicycle industry is at Taipei first. So that's a big thing. There is the Hop River Mountain Bike Race on April 15th. That is the very first of the CCAP Mountain Bike Series to get the kids out on the bikes, but it is also there for adults too. So that is beginning on April 15th. Once again, you go directly to Bike Reg and you will find that. The International Ride of Silence on May 17th. Contact person will be Kevin Mahan, who is a regular listener on the show. And if you go to the Ride of Silence site, which you can click on through the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, if you have any questions, you can get a hold of Kevin. But it will start at 10 South Eagleville Road in Storrs, Connecticut, at the Community Center and Town Hall and E.O. Smith High School. It's all in that same general area. It's a 3.5 mile ride to support those that have been either hit by a car or, unfortunately, we've lost to a car. So anyway, we're looking forward to it. We're really looking to get a big crowd this year, so hopefully that'll work. All right, then. You know, that's enough for now. I've got the bicycle game in Hartford. Don't forget about that. That is at the Historical Society, Connecticut Historical Society. Very cool thing. If you want to learn more about the history of bicycles in the state of Connecticut, very, very cool thing to go to. And let's see. Finishing points. Don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historic Society. The Natchog Epic is coming at the end of March. And anyway, it's a beautiful thing. We got a lot of stuff going on. Get out and talk to your officials. Find out what you have to do to get on an agenda. If you need to get on the agenda to make a statement at your local town meeting, this is the time to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, lack of places to safely ride, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2023. Initiate. Participate. Ride your bike. Tell everyone you know. And finally, take on the Pedal and Ron Challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it for one day and use your bike. You may just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, Storrs, Connecticut, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. 7 FM, Storrs, Connecticut, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride.